dispute sort of boils down to whether or not it was very, very careless to have performed this operation in such a low level of light or for whatever reason triggered the mistake, or whether this was an ordinary thing that was not particularly careless and that there could be, you know, no improper action from the activity. Mm-hmm. And so it seems that the record's not well developed as far as those two alternatives.
Well, it's the employer who has the burden of proof here in proving a disqualification. If a claimant makes an initial showing of entitlement, then it's the employer's burden. So if there's insufficient evidence in the record to show that he was negligent, then the employer should not, or the then he should be entitled to unemployment benefits. There's nothing in the record, there's no evidence in the record to base a conclusion on that he was negligent.
Are we talking about disqualification now or fault? Because aren't those two different components?
Yes, they are, and I'd say it's clear that it's the employer's burden to prove a disqualification, and I would also say that it's their burden to prove fault as well, because they're both kind of defenses to the claim for benefits. So I think the employer has the burden on both, and if there is insufficient evidence, then the employer should not prevail, or he should get the benefits. And there's clearly no evidence in the record of negligence. The employers testified they could have put on evidence of something he did improperly, that there was in fact insufficient light. They never said there was insufficient light. They never said anything about any type of negligence or shoddiness or carelessness. There wasn't a shred of evidence of any of those things. And so I think here the evidence is that it was just simple unintentional error, that he simply was not, something was not visible. We're not talking about something huge. We're talking about something that's probably less than an inch is the amount that the brake shoe would extend beyond the brake drum, an inch or less. And we're not talking about something right here out on a table. We're talking about something under in a car where, you know, it's harder to see things. So it's not, you know, out of the realm of reasonableness to say on this occasion it just was not, that small difference was just not visible to him.
When you say it was an unintentional error, though, I keep going back to the chairlift case, and the court found that was an unintentional error.
But I think there is a difference. I think the lack of the unintentional thing is part of it, but also in this case there's nothing that he didn't do that he should have done. In the chairlift case, it was clear there was a crucial test. The employee simply did not do it and initially told his supervisor that he had done it. I think that's entirely different than this case, where there's nothing that he didn't do that he should have done. So it's both the combination is the totality of the circumstances, as we've been talking about, the fact that it was unintentional, the fact that he didn't skip any required steps, the fact that he was the one who found it and brought it to his employer's attention. Also, the fact that his supervisor was at least partially responsible for what happened, because he had ordered the parts and got the and received the wrong parts, and so, yet nothing was done to the supervisor. And so I think that illustrates the fact that you know, a simple mistake, unintentional mistake one time doesn't violate their employment standards, since that's not the approach they took to the other individual here. So I think there's also insufficient evidence, even before you get to the fault issue, I think there's isn't even sufficient evidence to say that he falls within the disqualification provision for failure to meet established performance standards. There was no performance standard that was cited by the school district that he violated, nothing about installing the brakes that he violated, and nothing about redlining the bus. There were absolutely no policies, no rules, nothing that the employer cited as a rule about redlining buses that this claimant failed to follow. There was absolutely no criteria, requirements about when a bus driver was supposed to, or a mechanic was supposed to do that. So he made the reasonable assumption that you do it if there's an immediate or short-term safety problem with the bus. And he made the reasonable determination based on his experience that there was no such problem in this case. And so I think there is insufficient evidence, as I said, first that he fits into the disqualification provision, and secondly that he was at fault for the separation from employment. If I have any time left, I'd like to reserve it.
You have a minute and 27 seconds left. You may reserve that, of course.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dreyer.
Good Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kelly Dude from the law firm of Anderson, Dude, Bailey, and LaBelle in Colorado Springs. It's my pleasure to represent my client, the Harrison School District 2, in this matter. Seated to my left is the Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources, Dolores Mullins, from the Harrison School District. Let's talk for a minute about what Mr. Gomez did or didn't do and why, although I wasn't involved in this matter until the appeal letter, it was clear to me when I reviewed the record that there was more than one instance of Mr. Gomez failing to do something that he should have done, that he clearly knew he should have done, and subsequently admitted that he didn't do. And as an aside, any of us who are parents, I think, would be offended by the notion that no harm, no foul. There could have been a tragic bus accident, but, you know, it never happened, and so let's
What evidence is there of that?
Well, there was evidence from Mr. Olney, who was the transportation supervisor, who said that it was, he considered it to be a major malfeasance, and that, in fact,
he did not use those words, counsel.
He used malfeasance. He was asked whether he could, I'm sorry, he asked whether it was malfeasance, and he said yes.
No, I'm
and
talking
he said
about
it could have been a significant danger.
Yes, and had he ever, there's no evidence that he ever examined the brakes.
I think that it was based on what he was told by not only Mr. Gomez, but by the person who, I mean, he's the supervisor of transportation.
Yes.
Presumably, he's knowledgeable about buses and their operation. In fact, Ms. Dreyer would say that he was the person that Mr. Gomez, you know, ultimately reported the incident to. I think he, based on his experience, but let's not forget Mr. Gomez's experience. He had considerable experience both in the Army and 4 years experience with the Harrison School District as a mechanic, and he had installed brakes on numerous occasions. And let's go back chronologically for a minute. He's the one that initially inspected the bus in the summer of 08 and determined that the brakes needed to be replaced. He was the person who took off the old brakes that were the correct brakes and drums. He took them off himself. He then looked at the new brakes, presumably side by side. He knew what was taken off, he knew what was put on, and yet he didn't notice that in fact they were different. And he admitted that he had, it was part of his responsibility to inspect the brakes before they were installed. And I apologize, I didn't mean to misrepresent in my brief that it was, that he said it was his obligation to inspect it afterwards, but I am going to cite testimony from Mr. Olney that reasonably supports that conclusion as well. But he had an obligation, he admitted, to inspect the brakes before they were installed. Okay, what does that mean? I'll tell you, I'm the world's worst mechanic. But if all he was required to do is open a box and say, yep, they're new, if that's all he had to do, I could do that. Anybody could do that. You know that when you take brakes out of a box and they're in a wrapping, they're new. Certainly his responsibility was more than that. He had an obligation to inspect the brakes before they were put on, and at the very best, giving him the best interpretation, he was certainly negligent in his failure to observe when he inspected the brakes. The new brakes out of the box were different than the brakes he had just taken off of that same bus. Yes.
Considering the totality of the circumstances, what effect, if any, is it that his supervisor had a responsibility to inspect as well?
Well, I look at it this way. Because someone else may have been partially at fault and maybe could have been disciplined by the district doesn't absolve Mr. Gomez of his responsibility. He admitted in the record.
Well, does it not? Is it not a part of the totality of the circumstances that have to be considered?
I don't think so. I think the totality of the circumstances is what were his actions, what were the reasonable expectations of the employer as to his actions, what did he admit he himself was supposed to do, whether there were other people that could potentially have you know, negated the situation to some, to me, is irrelevant. We're talking about this particular claimant, whether he's entitled to unemployment compensation, not whether somebody else maybe should have been disciplined as well. That's, I don't think there are very many circumstances where one person can is so overwhelmingly responsible that there aren't other people potentially in a chain that could have somewhere along the way stepped in and maybe had a different outcome. The fact of the matter is it didn't happen, and even after Mr. Gomez discovered the problem, even after he discovered it, and he admitted that his options were to redline it or take some action to take it out of service, he made the independent determination that that wasn't necessary. Now, where are the responsibilities outlined by the district that says that's his responsibility, that's his decision to make? There's nothing to suggest that. Am I out of time already?
No, I don't think so. Excuse me, Ms. Bailiff, how much, do you know how much time is remaining?
I know I talk fast, but I didn't think I talked that fast.
This shows nine, or that's the time, I guess.
I thought just a minute ago it showed about 10 minutes. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not going to need all that time, I don't think.
Well, it's now set at 6:53 or 52. Does that?
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine.
Excuse me? Okay, so if that sounds reasonable to you, Mr. Duda,
that's fine.
Let me interject and ask a question.
Sure.
Judge Burris asked before of Ms. Dreyer about the difference between disqualification and totality of the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Your answer to Judge Criswell about the totality of the circumstances sounded to me like you were only describing the circumstances for disqualification. What, in your view, is the difference between, in this case, between disqualification and the totality of the circumstances?
You know, it's a difficult question, at least for me to answer. I think
that's why we're here.
I know. It seems to me that what you have to do is the totality of the circumstances says you look at what an employee's responsibilities are, what actions he did or didn't take, were they reasonable under the circumstances, and if so, it doesn't have to be an intentional, willful, or duplicate act. It can be a single act that's unintentional, but certainly clearly something that was within his scope of responsibility that he failed to do.
Let me try and amplify on that.
Okay.
I mean, there was conflicting testimony here about the likelihood of, or the degree of risk by the wrong size brakes being installed. Mm-hmm. Is that something that could be considered, in your view, under the totality of the circumstances?
I suppose it could. There was an opinion from Mr. Gomez that he didn't think that it was a major issue. There was a testimony from Mr. Olney that clearly said that he believed that it was. But I think what Ms. Dreyer's, the crux of her argument is, you know, nothing happened. Therefore, since nothing terrible happened, then he shouldn't be punished for it.
Counsel,
when in fact, I don't think it's undisputed that something could have happened.
Counsel, the testimony was, the record shows that both Mr. Olney, and Mr. Gomez testified that the only thing that occurs by placing the wrong size drums on the wrong size on shoes is that it wears unevenly, mm-hmm. and that there's no danger presented in running it for a period of time. Now, he admittedly, Mr. Olney later said that they, quote, could fail at any time, unquote. Mm-hmm. But we have no information that Mr. Olney even looked at these brakes.
Well, we don't have any information that he didn't either. I wasn't involved in the hearing, but I think the bottom line is, you can't have a standard in your department that says, It's okay if you install improper brakes and pads if there isn't an accident, and it's okay if you discover it and don't report it for 3 days if in the interim nothing happens, because even though something may have happened, it didn't happen in this case. I think that's an unreasonable standard, and I think it's reasonable for Mr. Olney to say, who's responsible for the safety, safe transportation of all students who ride those buses, to say it's not acceptable, first of all, to install the wrong brakes, particularly from a man that has the level of experience and the, that Mr. Gomez has. And second of all, it's not acceptable, once you discover the error, to simply wait for 3 or 4 days before taking steps to make absolutely certain that that bus doesn't run. Because even if it hadn't happened, it was possible that it could have. And that's inexcusable. And parents have a right to expect, and the supervisor of transportation has a right to expect that that sort of performance is not accepted, particularly when transporting public school children. Now, let me just quote briefly some questions and answers that were directed both to Mr. Gomez and then to Mr. Olney. Question. Well, is inspecting the parts a part of installation? Is that part of any training, or is that part of your job? Let's start first with training. Answer from Mr. Gomez. The training is, all of it is part, is my part to do, my job to do that. Question. Okay, to inspect the parts before you install them? Answer from Mr. Gomez. Yes.
This line of questions, it's just going to the fact that this was his job and he didn't do it correctly.
Correct.
And so therefore he was automatically at fault.
You know, again, I think under totality of the circumstances, let's say that part of a teacher's responsibility, a principal tells a teacher, part of your responsibility is to remove the trash from the trash can every day, okay? And they fail to do that. I would concede under that circumstance, that's a minor, trivial task. And failure to do it probably would not justify, under any reasonable stance, firing the teacher. However, the responsibility to inspect brakes and brake pads before you put it on a school bus transporting children clearly is a different matter.
But
so
counsel,
I think you have to look at the specific circumstances.
Counsel, here we have someone's negligence in providing him the parts to begin with. And that negligence was either a supervisor's negligence or a vendor's negligence. After he installed them, we have a supervisor not performing his job to inspect the job. Now, cannot those circumstances be considered in determining whether or not the employee here was at fault in his termination?
I suppose you could consider them, but to me, they're minor considerations, overridden by the fact that Mr. Gomez admitted it's his responsibility to inspect the brakes before they are installed, but not somebody else's, his. And even if the mistake was made, it was within his ability to notice the mistake. He had the old brakes there. He had the new brakes and pads. He had lots of experience. He clearly could have brought it to the attention, and it never would have happened.
Counsel, I don't think there's any question about that. Had he not been given the wrong parts to begin with, it never would have happened. Had his supervisor inspected the job afterwards, it never would have happened.
Well, if you want to take it to absurdity, if I'm negligent in an accident, but somebody held me up for 5 minutes to ask me a question, and but for that, I wouldn't have been in the accident. You're right. I would concede that. But I don't think that's the kind of reasoning that should be used in a case like this. It was clearly within his control and his responsibility to inspect those brakes before they were installed. He admitted he didn't do it. And even after he found the mistake later on, he took no affirmative steps to make sure that that bus didn't go out again. And that's, to me, is certainly sufficient grounds to deny him unemployment benefits. I appreciate your time.
Mr. Dude, your time appears to be up, but because we had this glitch with the clock, I just want to make sure that you have feel that you've had a full opportunity to say whatever you intended to.
Well, I just wanted to, if I may, there was one more quote from the record that I wanted to give, and it won't take any time at all.
Sure.
This is an exchange, again,
question asked for Mr. Olney. Mr. Olney, whose responsibility is it to ensure that the proper parts are installed, not will be installed, are installed on a vehicle at the time of installation? Answer, the technician that's doing the work. Okay? And that technician was Mr. Gomez. He had the responsibility. He failed to do it. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Dude. Ms. Dreyer, you have a minute and 25 seconds for your...
I just want to respond, first of all, to the statement that Mr. Gomez had an obligation to inspect the parts before he put them in, and he didn't do that. That's not correct. The record indicates that he said he did look at them, but that you could not tell just looking at them on the pallet that they were the wrong size. Mr. Dude was speaking about having both pairs of brakes together and comparing them. There's nothing in the record about that. Mr. Dude also mentioned some allegation about other incidents where Mr. Gomez didn't do what he was supposed to, also not in the record. What is in the record is Mr. Gomez's explanation for why he didn't think there was an immediate danger, that the uneven wearing, a gradual process, it was only worn down a little bit, and Mr. Olney didn't dispute that. In fact, he admitted that all of those facts were true, but simply made the statement that the brakes could have failed at any moment without any support, any evidence, or explanation for it. So I'd say under those circumstances, Mr. Gomez's testimony with his full explanation for why he made that conclusion is much more persuasive than Mr. Olney's statement that had no evidentiary basis or explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dreyer. I apologize again for the glitch with the clock, but I hope that you feel you had an adequate time for your presentation. We appreciate the oral arguments this morning. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. That concludes the oral arguments this morning for Division 1, and the court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce.